Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Simply by our remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Purport. The importance of holy places of pilgrimage is due to presence of great sages and saints. It is said that sinful persons go to holy places and leave their sins there to accumulate. But the presence of the great saints disinfects the accumulated sins, and thus the holy places continue to remain sanctified by the grace of the devotees and saints present there. If such saints appear in the houses, in the homes of worldly people, certainly the accumulated sins of such worldly enjoyers become neutralized. Therefore, the holy saints actually have no self-interest with the householders. The only aim of such saints is to sanctify the houses of the householders, and the householders therefore should feel grateful when such saints and sages appear in their doors. A householder who dishonors such holy orders is a great offender. It is enjoined, therefore, that a householder who does not bow down before a saint at once must undergo fasting for the day in order to neutralize the great offense. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakayam Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I'm going to repeat the translation again. Simply by remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak something on Srimad Bhagavatam. In the previous verse, in the verse 32, we can see how Maharaj Parikshit start actually offering obeisances, prayers, and the glorification of Shukadeva Goswami. And in the previous verses, it was narrated the lakshanas of Shukadeva Goswami when he appeared in the assembly. So it's interesting in comparison to actually see that when great personalities are leaving the body, that also great assembly gathers together. Can anyone tell me any great assembly when someone was actually prepared to leave his body? Any great assembly of Vaishnavas when they gathered together? Parajan Prabhu? Yes. Srila Prabhupada when he was leaving his body? Very nice. Bhishma Dev was leaving his body? Narottam Das Thakur, Haridas Thakur. So it means that in the present day and age, when someone leaves the body, it's an act of that we are very much upset and we are actually very much terrified as well simultaneously. But when great Vaishnavas are leaving the body, it's an act of opportunity to gather together, glorify the lifetime of that personality, and same time hear the narrations and the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Because if your life is saturated with Krishna consciousness, if your life is saturated with pastimes about the Supreme Lord, if your life is saturated by devotional service, how do you think you're going to be leaving the body? Ultimately, we know that it doesn't really matter for a Vaishnava if he leaves his body somewhere in a dham, or somewhere in a place which is not place of pilgrimage. If he's leaving his body because of old age, or if he's leaving his body due to other instances, unnatural way of leaving the body, it doesn't really matter. But on occasions like this, great personalities gather together. And here, Shukadev Goswami, when he appeared in the assembly of Parikshit Maharaj and all the great sages in in the head with Parikshit Maharaj, they recognize his magnanimity. And I would like to take the liberty of reading the translations of a few more verses which are ahead of us. I'm not going to say any more about them, but rather just to give you a synopsis of what is going to be spoken and what kind of a meditation was Parikshit Maharaj absorbed in. One of the names of Parikshit Maharaj, which previously we've been discussing, is Vishnurata. Vishnurata is a personality who is protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one who is protected by Vishnu. So we can tell that there are many different types of protection, right? In the womb of Uttara, Parikshit Maharaj was protected by the Lord himself, and also by the club, by the Sudarshan Chakra of the Supreme Lord. But what kind of protection is provided to Parikshit Maharaj, to Vishnurata, at this point? That protection should be understood that is the protection of Krishna Katha and protection of Assembly of Great Vaishnavas, headed out by Shukadev Goswami. So the next verse is, just as the atheist cannot remain in the presence of the personality of Godhead, so also the invulnerable sins of a man are immediately vanquished in your presence, O saint, O great mystic. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, has accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. Otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is that you have voluntarily appeared here, though you are moving incognito to the common man and are not visible to us who are in the verge of death? O powerful Brahmana, it is said that you hardly stay in the house of a man long enough to milk a cow. And then last verse, Sri Suta Goswami said, the king thus spoke and questioned the sage using sweet language. Then the great and powerful personality, the son of Vyasadev, who knew the principles of religion, began his reply. So we can see that the inquiry of Shukadev Goswami's inquiry of Parikshit Maharaj starts with actually glorifying Shukadev Goswami. Therefore, his heart kind of melts and he's ready to start narrating the pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam. We can say, and we can see even in our personal lives, if someone is treating us nicely, correctly, humbly, and inquires from us, then we are very much eager and happy to present the Krishna consciousness with all its intricacies and all its subtle secrets, right? If someone is not responsive to the message of Krishna consciousness, then we hesitate to kind of, we somehow withdraw ourselves. So this is the kind of a, this is the medium how Krishna Katha can be delivered, through the character of humility and also very much through the very correct cultural approach from side of Vishnurata onto the Shukadev Goswami. So I was thinking when I was reading the purport of Srila Prabhupada, he very much speaks about the places of holy pilgrimage and the association of great saints. And through certain, I will start asking myself, where is the place where the saints reside? And the answer is very simple. They reside in the holy dhams. And then I ask myself, what is the location of the holy dham? And the answer was to me that most of the holy dhams are actually located near to the banks of great rivers. Rivers like Yamuna, rivers like Ganga, rivers like Kaveri, Sindhu. Like all of these great rivers, most of the pilgrimage sites are near the locations of these great rivers. So I was thinking, why is that these great saints and sages are actually residing next to the rivers? And the answer is very simple. And is mentioned in this verse. Shaucha, cleanliness, shuddhyanti. The act of purification within the life of a saintly person is very much predominant and very much necessary to actually perform his necessary activities of Krishna consciousness. It is said that in Pancharatak Pradeep, it is said that Kurma Purana says that without taking Pratasnana means bath before sunrise, one remains impure and cannot perform any of the daily activities a civilized person must perform, such as japa, Homa and deity worship. In the Garuda Purana, Acharakanda 213, it is stated, Like a dip in the holy Ganga, the morning ablutions give pleasure to the mind, increasing beauty and fortune, and remove sorrow and misery. So here it is said in the purport by Srila Prabhupada that when people with a lot of sin activities, they go to Ganga or Yamuna and they kind of deposit their sin into the river of Ganga or Yamuna or any other rivers. So what it means is that these bodies, these rivers, they actually absorb your sins. And there is a pastime in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the appearance and request of Mother Ganga from King Bhagiratha. King Bhagiratha, through, I think he was the third generation of kings who was actually performing a lot of sacrifices that he may invoke the presence of Mother Ganga. So it goes like this. There's a verse, 995. O King, I do not wish to go down to the planet Earth, for there the people in general will bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sinful reactions accumulate in me, how shall I become free from them? So this is Mother Ganga actually speaking to King Bhagiratha, saying, I don't want to descend. Because all these sinful people, they will actually give all their sins upon me. So then what should I do? So we can even see that how Mother Ganga, a pure celestial being, is actually afraid of sin or sin activities. But then King Bhagiratha responds in the verse number 6. Bhagiratha said, those who are saintly because of devotional service and are therefore in the renounced order, free from material desires, and who are pure devotees, expert in following the regulative principles mentioned in the Vedas, are always glorious and pure in behavior, and are able to deliver all fallen souls. When such pure devotees bathe in your water, the sinful reactions accumulated from other people will certainly be counteracted. For such devotees always keep in the core of their hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can vanquish all sinful reactions. So King Bhagiratha is actually giving some kind of assurance to Mother Ganga. You don't be afraid. These personalities which hold the devotional service above and all, they hold the Supreme Personality of God within their hearts. And therefore, when they descend, they will actually purify you. So there is a kind of a small bridge between the purificatory aspect of Mother Ganga and actually the purificatory aspect of a Vaishnava. So which are the sins, or what are the prayers actually that people wash themselves off? And it is mentioned in the Garuda Purana that these are the prayers or sins which Mother Ganga is taking away. The sins of not giving charity, doing forbidden acts, committing violence, committing adultery, speaking harsh words, uttering falsehood, speaking scandalous words, speaking nonsensical words, covering another man's wealth, and wishing evil to others. So we can see that all these 10 somehow offenses, or all these 10 sin activities, are actually deposed onto Mother Ganga. But then, on the contrary, Mother Ganga stores the piety, purity, and good Krishna consciousness of other personalities within her. And that's actually the purificatory aspect which she purifies others. Therefore, we can even tell that Mother Ganga, or these celestial nadis, Om Gange Chayamune Chaiva Godavari Sarasvati Narmande Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmim Samidim Kuru, all these seven principal nadis, they actually working rather as a medium to store the piety of Vaishnavas, or those which hold Krishna within the cords of their hearts. Prabhupada writes in the purport to in the canto 9, because saintly devotees always keep the Lord within the core of their hearts, they can perfectly cleanse the holy places of all sinful reactions. Therefore, people in general must always respectfully honor saintly persons. It is ordered that as soon as one sees a Vaishnava or even a sannyasi, one should immediately offer respects to such a holy man. If one forgets to show respect in this way, one must observe a fast for the day. For that day. This is Vedic injunction. One must be extremely careful to refrain from committing offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee or a saintly person. So much said about the places of pilgrimage. So much said about the piety of the place of pilgrimage. Now we're going to kind of dive into the aspect of how can we counteract the sins which are accumulated within us by proper culture. We can see that in Srimad Bhagavatam and in the behavior of King Parikshit is not only about this intense inquiry about the Supreme Lord. It's not only about the humility, it's not only about patience, it's not only about spiritual taste, but very much it's also about taste and culture between speaker and the one who receives the message. Right, Srimad Bhagavatam and Shukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj are glorified because there was a perfect reciprocation. That was that perfect kind of a bus. That was that perfect interaction between the one who narrates Srimad Bhagavatam and one who hears Srimad Bhagavatam. Think about it for a moment. Srimad Bhagavatam is actually... obviously, we understand that through the heart of Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadev Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam manifested. But same time, there was that individual kind of a focus of Parikshit Maharaj when he was directing. Somehow he was asking specific questions. He was asking questions about different kings. He was asking questions about the different pastimes of the Lord. He was asking questions about intricacies of philosophy, of Siddhanta. He was asking questions to establish the superiority of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Think about it that if Parikshit Maharaj would decide to take his questions, Bhagavatam could take completely different shape and form. Bhagavatam is not selection of verses. Bhagavatam is not only selection of pastimes. It's also simultaneously a message which should be presented, right? Srimad Bhagavatam narrates three principal factors, or has three principal factors. And that is bhakti as a process, bhakta as a performer, and Bhagavan as a recipient. So bhakta, bhakti, and Bhagavan are the three principal messages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And as such, just like you have combinations of goodness, passion, and ignorance, there's a variety of things. Therefore, simultaneously, the Srimad Bhagavatam can also present variety. It is mentioned in the 15th verse of the first canto, first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. O Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganges are sanctified only after prolonged use. So there was that first point that the holy places, if someone renders a service unto them, if someone takes bath or takes advantage of a holy place, then he will get purified. But here in this verse, it is said that that purification will take a long time. It will take you kind of a span of time, right? To get rid of all that accumulated sins which gather within your heart. But then when you see a Vaishnava, when you see a devotee, what happens because of that instant mercy, that purification is much more intensified. Why? Ask yourself why. Because that between medium, which is the Ganga or the holy rivers, is just taken away. Right? Does it make sense? There's a great personality. There's the medium which stores the piety, which is the Mother Ganga. And there's that recipient of that piety or those blessings. And what do you do? That medium or the sacred nadi or a holy place just disappears for a moment, and straight away that mercy directly flows to you from the Vaishnava onto the recipient. Does it make sense? So this is the purificatory aspect of a Vaishnava or a devotee. Therefore, when Shukadev Goswami appeared, straight away, due to all the lakshanas and the aura and the presence of Shukadev Goswami, all the present Vaishnavas stood up. All the great sages, they stood up immediately just to offer the respect to the 16-year-old boy, right? Previously, we've been discussing the situation where Shukadev Goswami was followed by all these women and children, which been mocking him, making fun of him, not truly understanding the magnanimity of this personality. And then imagine the situation, right? Imagine the situation. Some of you have closed eyes, so I beg you to imagine for a moment. Shukadev Goswami appears where there in the banks of Yamuna, where sits a great king, assembled with all these great sages. And the moment these great sages, they saw Shukadev Goswami, immediately they got up. Imagine how would you feel if you would be that assembly which was gathered around Shukadev Goswami, following him and mocking him and making fun of him. Suddenly, it stops. You're just like, whoa, what just happened now? Why all these great sages are offering such a respect to this boy? I was mocking him, I was making fun of him. So this is the magnanimity of a devotee. Sometimes that magnanimity is not only shown within these lakshanas or within the body marks of a personality, but some of that portion of magnanimity is hidden from the eyes of mundane personalities or mundane people. Prabhupada was walking on the planet for so many years. It took him, Prabhupada was preaching within the Western world for 12 years. 12 years. It was just like a thunderbolt. Just like when you have a thunderbolt, it just struck, and only for a moment you can see it. First there is a light, and then there is a sound. But the third aspect of a thunderbolt is something, the power, the sheer energy, the strength, which can, it is said actually that the thunderbolt can sustain big cities or towns, you know, for, I don't know, for a year, right? The one impact of a thunderbolt can sustain a city with all the necessities, you know, of electricity for 1 year. That's quite a lot. Imagine London being sustained 1 year by one thunderbolt. That's powerful. So this is the message, and this is how Srila Prabhupada was. This is how Srila Prabhupada was preaching. Only in the span of 12 years, what he established, he kind of changed generations, hundreds and thousands of generations yet to come. And if you look at the Srimad Bhagavatam, the narration was taken, it took 7 days. Not 12 years, 7 days. So due to the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the meet, or the transition, the questions and answers between Shukadev Goswami and King Parikshit, thousands upon thousands of years, Srimad Bhagavatam will be glorified based on the 7 day conversation. That's powerful. So the breaking point is here, is right here. The breaking point of Srimad Bhagavatam is when Shukadev Goswami entered the assembly of Parikshit Maharaj. That was the entry point. That was the beginning of a thunderbolt. That was the beginning of something which changed generations of people. So that was the moment. And then, because of the culture, because of Supreme Lord present within the heart of Parikshit Maharaj, he recognized it. And then he started the glorification. So the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam ends in the glorification or preparation. Preparation for something yet to come. Preparation, something yet to be revealed. Preparation for something which will deliver not only Parikshit Maharaj and the personalities present there, but also thousands upon thousands and thousands of people yet to come, yet to be born, yet to receive this actually great boon of Srimad Bhagavatam. The question may be raised, as we mentioned in the point, right? We establish somehow the nadis or the sacred places of pilgrimage hold a great potency. Then we spoke that how this great potency is contained within the heart of Vaishnavas or great devotees. Now the question may be raised, why these great personalities travel? Why they come from one place to another? It is mentioned here, the only aim of such saints is to sanctify the houses of householders, and the householders therefore should feel grateful when such saints and sages appear at their doors. The question is why? Why do they travel? In the 10th canto, there is a similarity in 10th canto, 8th chapter, appearance of Garga Muni in the house of Danda Maharaj. This is verse 4. Nanda Maharaj is asking, what can I do for you? What can I do? How can I serve you? And then he mentions, because you don't need this. You don't need my service. You don't need what I can facilitate. Because why? You are already satisfied within. And the term is Mahat Vichalanam. And translation of the Vaishnava Acharyas is the wandering of the greats. The wandering of the greats. The great personalities wander not because they want to be satisfied by something, or they can be satisfied, but they wander just to deliver some kind of a, they deliver, they want to deliver, they want to preach. So these great personalities 5,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago, millions of years ago, their desire to preach was so powerful that they've been ready somehow or another, just like Prabhupada. Prabhupada was satisfied in Vrindavan. Prabhupada had first-class bhajan, right? Prabhupada had everything one can desire in his life. But yet, because of the order of his spiritual master, he started wandering around the planet and giving the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So Nanda Maharaj is requesting, how can I serve you? Once I was I think I mentioned this pastime some time ago. Once I was serving His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj, and I asked him a question, right? Maharaj, what can I do for you? And he looked at me, and he was like, what do you mean what you can do for me? You can't do anything for me. He said, what can you do? What can you actually do for me? And I was just, it just clicked. It's like, yes, I apologize, I can't do anything. And then I just kind of changed, and I said, how can I serve you, Maharaj? And he said, yes, you may serve me. Then he gave me his unclean cloth to wash and iron. So what can we do? We can't do anything, but we can serve. Because the reason why we cannot do anything is because you can do something for someone who's of need of something. Does it make sense? Right? Many, and especially here is mentioned, householders and those which are connected with the three modes of material nature, they have constantly desires. They have desires, they have needs. They want something, they want this, they want that. Therefore, they have needs. But for those which are saintly personalities, sadhus, they don't have needs. Their only need is already facilitated by the Supreme Lord. And because they relish the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, what happens, their needs, they diminish from a material perspective, right? Look at the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. No beds, no places to stay, randomly eating, randomly some prasadam comes, loincloth, simple kind of a mendicant cloth. So what do? You actually reduce 99% of all your needs just by becoming associating with the needs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the importance or intricacies of this specific verse. First of all, the body of the nadis or the sacred rivers like Ganga, then the magnanimity of the Vaishnavas, and then the reciprocation between the householders or those which have still some needs and those which don't have any needs. That's the importance of the culture presented here by Parikshit Maharaj. And how do we know that these great personalities hold the Supreme Lord dear within their hearts? Or how do we know actually that bhakti is the superior or is the most supreme activity within the realm of material world? Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gornitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So who's the greatest authority on the Vedas? At all, at top. Even higher than him. Brahma. And this is what Brahma said. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Vedas three times. And after scrutinizing and examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna is the highest perfection of religion. Right? So you say you are a saintly person. And say, how do you know? How do you know you are a saintly person? What is your desire? What is your need? What is your highest perfection in life? And is established by Brahma in the second canto, second chapter, verse 34. Brahma said, those which hold the Supreme Personality of God, Sri Krishna, in their hearts, which have attraction for them, they are the most perfect Vaishnavas or most perfect devotees. So there are two principal things. If you want to literally boil down the material and the spiritual world, it comes down to two things. One thing is desire. Another thing is association. These two things are the most principal things within our spiritual or material life. Desire and association. Why Prabhupada is constantly stressing association? Right? The moment you wake up in the morning, what do? You start associating. How? You offer your obeisances to spiritual master. What do you do next? You took bath. What do? You associate. You associate something which is purer than you, right? You associate with the body of water, which, let's say, is Ganga. Even if you take shower here in the Bhaktivedanta Manor, you can recite this mantra. Om Gange Chayamune Chayva Godavari Saraswati Narmande Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmin Samidim Kuru. Why? Because that transforms subtly the mundane water into Ganga Jal. So it's no different from you taking bath in Ganga and the sacred rivers if you recite these mantras. Then what do? You associate it with the water, right? Then what do? You put on clean clothes. You put on tilak. Straight away you associate with the names of the Lord. What do? Afterwards, you come to the temple room. What do? You associate with the Supreme Lord. You associate with the Vaishnava Acharyas by respecting their prayers, by chanting the mantras. Then what do? You associate with Tulsi Maharani. Then what do? You associate with the holy name. Then what do? You associate with the lordships again. Then what do? You associate with the Vaishnava Acharya again. And then what do? You associate with Srimad Bhagavatam. Then what do? You take prasadam. You associate it with prasadam. Then what do? Then you associate with Krishna Bhakti. You associate with the process. You associate with practical devotional service. Then what do? Then you associate more with some practical service. And then you take more prasadam, right? Then if you have to catch up on your rounds or whatever. So the principal point of devotional life is association. And the question is, what kind of association you desire? So the question was, what actually attracts these saintly personalities, right? It is said in 10th canto, 10th chapter, verse 17. Daridrasyaya yujyante sadhava samadarshina shabdi, and I don't remember this verse, and my printer was jamming. Tat urut vishuddhyati. Translation: saintly persons may freely associate with those who are poverty stricken, but not with those who are rich. A poverty stricken man, by association with saintly persons, very soon becomes uninterested in material desires, and the dirty things with the core of his heart are cleansed away. So what is the preliminary qualification for one to actually receive association? And the answer is even here in this verse by Parikshit Maharaj. And the answer is humility, or taking position lower than what you want to associate with, right? Imagine the sages don't go to Ganga and say, well, now I will purify you, Mother Ganga. Are you ready? Are you ready, Mother Ganga? I'm going to just jump in and you should be ready for some good solid purification. No. They enter Mother Ganga and say, kindly purify me. You don't go to your spiritual master and say, dear spiritual master, are you ready? I'm going to deliver some serious Siddhanta. You don't go to Srimad Bhagavatam and say, well, I think I can write maybe 10-15 verses in this chapter is slightly missing. I can give a bit more Siddhanta in here. No. The aspect of how you can receive or attract this is that the aspect of humility, aspect of putting yourself lesser. That's how the transition of purification may take place. Otherwise, where is that transaction? The transaction will not take place. So what attracts those personalities? Usually the great personalities, they don't spend much time with those who are rich, those which are seeking pleasure from material living. Great souls, they look for those who are poverty stricken, and their pride is destroyed by the influence of their bad karma. So your best qualification is just to see and reflect upon your life, right? How much do I have? How wealthy I am? How intelligent I am? And if the answer is not much, not really, and I'm kind of struggling, then that's the correct answer. That's the correct answer for you to actually properly receive the mercy. Those who are Samadarshina are different than the rest of the world who seek actually the association of rich and wealthy people, because they are not interested in their wealth. But here we can see that these Maha Anubhav Munaya are actually seeking the association of greatest and the wealthiest person on the planet, King Parikshit. The qualification which attract these great souls is that Maharaj Parikshit became Daridrasyaya, or poverty stricken. In our concept, it means not that you are poor materially, but poor spiritually. Because when there is lack of something, we are ready to accept any opportunity of gain. Does it make sense? So if Maharaj Parikshit look at Shukadev Goswami and say like, look, I'm Vishnu Ratha. In the womb of my mother, I was protected by Vishnu. Through my whole life, I fight Kali. I'm a powerful king. You're a 16 years old boy, looking good, but you know, 16 years old boy. You know what happened? Magic is gone. Shukadev Goswami most likely will be like, thank you very much for your kind time, Hare Krishna. I'm gone. So the right transition of mercy needs to happen if there's a right transition or right state of consciousness. So they are happy within their ashrams. They don't need to leave their ashrams. But why they leave their ashrams? Because those which are poverty stricken are not ready to go to the ashrams. Those ashram means a shelter. Ashram doesn't mean only brahmachari ashram. Ashram means, you know, brahmachari ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, sannyasa ashram. Ashram means shelter. So those which are not ready to accept the shelter will come to them. That's what is mentioned. A householder who dishonors such a holy orders is a great offender. It is enjoined, therefore, that householders who does not bow down before a saint at once must undergo fasting for the day in order to neutralize the great offense. So someone who's lacking that aspect of humility is actually cutting the transition between the mercy and the recipient, or yourself. So the question may be again raised, why they come? This is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8.4. O my Lord, great devotee, persons like you move from one place to another, not for their own interest, but for the sake of poor-hearted grihasthas, householders. Otherwise, they have no interest in going from one place to another. They have no interest, right? No interest whatsoever. Like, the question may be raised, why we go on book distribution? I ask myself so many times when I was on books and doing Sankirtan, why am I even here? Why, God, I'm here, right? It's rainy. People don't like me. They look at me as some like hobo weird person standing in the middle of the street. You know, I'm trying to distribute some spiritual transcendental literature. It's not appreciated. People don't appreciate this. Why they don't appreciate it? Because they think they're better. And that's the lacking. They think that they know better. I know better. I am better. What happens then? The medium is then cut. The purity cannot be kind of transmitted. But what do sages do? Out of the humility, they say, you know, you're a very intelligent person, right? You're very smart. Please take this book. It will help you. You try a bit of meditation. You have definitely qualities of a great saint. Take this. So if a person is fully satisfied within himself, he does need anything at all. All these great sages have been situated at the Atmaram platform, and therefore they don't require any boons, no blessings from others. The only desire of these great sages is to deliver the mercy, as they inherit the mood and mission of the Supreme Lord. Paritranam sadunam vinasha chadushkritam. It's not only that Krishna is paritranam sadunam vinasha chadushkritam. Also those which follow in the footsteps of the Supreme Lord, those which follow in the footsteps of Acharyas, they take this mood, they take the mission. Paritranaya sadunam vinasha chadushkritam. And we don't run around in the streets of UK, in London, in Leicester, in Nottingham with Sudarshan Chakra and cutting the heads of all these miscreants. No. What we do, we run around with different bullets. We run around with books, right? And what do? We use these books as weapon. And the same thing, paritrana sadunam vinasha chadushkritam. You're dushkritina. Have a look at this. This will cut you. This will cut you to pieces. This transcendental philosophy will cut all that you think you are, right? The false ego, the ahankar, the needs and the desires. You know what? It will cut even more. It will cut all that association. It will cut all those desires, all that hankering that you have. It will cut. It will be cut to pieces. So, just to wrap up, there is again in the 10th canto, chapter 84, verse 11, it is said, mere bodies of water are not the real sacred places of pilgrimage, nor are mere images of earth and stone the true worshipable deities. These purify one only after a long time, but saintly sages purify one immediately upon being seen. Right? Just by you, just by someone seeing you, just by seeing Prabhupada, just by someone seeing a picture of, you know, Radha Gokulananda, someone just by seeing you having your Vaishnava dress, your Vaishnava attire, your beautiful tilak on, they will get purified. Why? Because you are that medium of Krishna consciousness for others. It's not that all these miscreants can come and straight away jump into Ganga or have darshan of the Supreme Lord. But they can see you. They can see your character. According to this statement, there are different stages of purification for common men and the great man like these munis. For normal men, they go to places like Ganga, right? Yamuna, to take bath. For great sages, they go to these places for the real purification. And that is, what is the real purification? Satsanga, Dhamma Seva. The real purification is from here, from those which are residents, those which make the saintly place truly saintly. What will be Vrindavan without saintly people? What will be Mayapur without saintly people, without devotees? What will be, you know, Dwaraka without saintly people? What will be Jagannath Puri without all these Vaishnavas and devotees? It will be just another geographical location on the map. Nothing more. Yes, there is some potency. But that potency accumulates through bhakti. Bhakti, bhakta, and bhagavan. So, another verse. The Supreme Personality of God has said, "My dear Uddhava, by associating with my pure devotees, one can destroy one's attachment for all objects of material sense gratification. Such purifying association brings me under the control of my devotee." So by one associating with pure devotees, the Supreme Lord becomes enchanted. He becomes connected with the personality. Therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination of the modes of material nature and engage exclusively in my loving service. This is conclusion. This is 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 25, verse 33. So take advantage of the great association. Take this advantage of power of the association. And we kind of described the sacred rivers as the places of pilgrimage. Then we went into the point of understanding that actually the medium of this purification is bhakta, holding Bhagavan within their hearts. And then we came to conclusion that actually the supreme way to connect with Krishna is through process of bhakti or process of associating and serving the Vaishnavas. So I'll end up here. If there are any points, questions, notes, or anything. Taruna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Hare Wonderful Krishna. Class. Thank Puranga. You. In regard of deposing sins in the rivers, this was your main first point. It's an interesting thing that if Mother Ganga is ready to accept sins of others and then to purify a river, saints take sins on themselves. And then to get rid of those sins, then saints must perform austerities. That means suffering. Or sometimes maybe Krishna takes their sins. But it seems to me like it's obviously that suffering is involved. Without suffering, can't get rid of those sins. So what makes one saint is readiness to suffer for others. That's kind of just a striking thing. It's not like cozy, rosy, I'm preaching, da-da-da. But what makes one sin is saint is how much is ready to suffer for others. So by looking in my heart, I'm not saint at all. And, you know, probably many can say also the same. So is that kind of, there's no other way, but through somebody's suffering, like Prabhupada would say, my disciples don't follow my instructions, therefore I get sick sometimes. So without suffering, can purify that.
I thought I mentioned, yeah. But I haven't used this verse. Okay, I haven't put it in my presentation. But I came across actually one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which I'm paraphrasing. It's saying that actually the sin doesn't fully touch the pure devotees, because pure devotees are connected to Agni. They're connected to fire. And the fire, because it constantly burns so heavily. So even if you throw like some local, like impediment things into fire, what happens straight away starts burning. So because devotees are so much pure and so much, and tapa actually means heat, right? Tapa doesn't mean only in connotation only austerity, but means heat. So if one performs tapasya, if one performs austerities, but again, austerities and jnana is a secondary to bhakti, right? First you establish bhakti, then tapasya and jnana will be no problem. Naturally, they will come. And tapasya will not be tapasya anymore, right? The six Goswamis, every day, different tree. No tapasya whatsoever. Looking from us as a tapasya, but it's not tapasya. Therefore, tapa means heat. And the more and more these austerities, which are secondary to devotional service, the more and more you are ablaze. The more and more the fire is within you. And even if some kind of a impediment is thrown to you or at you by the association of worldly people, it's naturally burnt. So the association means that you don't take association, you give association, right? Many of us, you know, like for instance, when we go home or when you go on the streets, it's not like when they start talking about football, you'll be like, yeah, Manchester, the best, you know, football club. Yeah, I love them. And straight away within your head, you just play football when you've been 11. No. You speak about for a moment about football, but then you say, well, these people, they constantly run after something. You know what they want? They want happiness, but I have this thing. This is what everyone runs after. Sorry? Yeah, just don't kick it, don't touch it with your foot, put it on your head. So the point was to conclude is that because of the heat of renunciation of the of bhaktas, the impurity which is stored by indifferent bodies of water cannot actually touch them, because they only give association, they don't take association. It's a selective process. Like I, when I'm books, it's not like I'm really interested, sorry to say. I'm not so interested in whatever they have to say as such. But we use it as a medium to get them interested. Hare Krishna.
Suffering is involved. I mean, like, if there's no suffering in tapasya, then it's like a laser time, you know. So you see, it's not like tejas is there, of course, burns everybody.
Acharyas also give commentaries. What is renunciation? What is tapasya? There's nothing for you to renounce. What is there for you to
you
renounce?
Can bloody inconvenience of body, of breath, you know.
Renunciation is a state
the
of consciousness.
Suffering must be involved in somehow, you know.
What is suffering for one person is happiness for another. And what is happiness for another is a renunciation for other. So for six Goswamis of Vrindavan or for Srila Prabhupada, it was not suffering, it was they've been satisfied. You know, Prabhupada slept in the mud hut. It was not renunciation, it was not suffering, it was happy to be in Vrindavan. So the point is, what is renunciation for you or suffering for you is not really suffering for me. Like Kerala Sabji, right? For some people, it's like hated or love it.
Let's talk about more serious things.
Yeah, or something else, yeah. So, yeah, that's my opinion. If any other devotees have any other points on this, Purjan Prabhu had his hands up. If you may speak to the mic, please.
Can you hear me? Oh, that's it. Prabhupada, in his departing from this world, was actually when somebody said that, look, please turn off the camera now. And he said, no, this is the final lesson. He was serving them in his departure of how to leave this world. And the other one was his father. He always said his father used to take in sadhus, and he was skeptical of them. But his father just invited sadhus into the house. So, and he was skeptical of their motives. But he didn't look at that. He did it as a matter of course, that it was his duty to invite sadhus. He didn't discriminate in that way. So they're wonderful examples of how Prabhupada was serving the devotees in his departure, in his last breath, and also that his father, irrespective of who he was serving, he didn't look at that. He saw them as sadhus in his heart. And the sadhu was in his heart, actually. You know, so that there are two examples that I can think of. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. I'll wrap it up here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.